Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride.
How long are you going to keep this up? Is this just going to be the thing?
Yeah.
Ah, I see. I'm just going to have to adjust.
Let's ride.
Anyway, we are a little over a week into the regular season now. We're recording early on a Thursday afternoon. The Thursday slate has not happened yet. And so we are going to go into the mailbag. Going to answer some questions, get some takes from our fellow dunkers. Just kind of surveying the season so far. Showing teams with some praise, asking some questions. Sharing some concerns. We're going to dig into that. First, a little bit of housekeeping on the injury front of the NBA. So we talked about the Orlando Magic quite a bit, or I talked about the Orlando Magic quite a bit during our Southeast preview. And I was excited about their skilled size and how many 6'7" plus players they can throw out there. We are now a weekend approaching the point where the Magic can only play players that are 6'7" or larger because all of their guards are hurt. We have not seen Gary Harris this season yet. Cole Anthony is now out with an oblique injury. Markelle Fultz is out with a toe injury. Jalen Suggs is dealing with an ankle injury. I am intrigued, but I'm also concerned. It's kind of like I've won, but at what cost is what it feels like. I like the idea of going with the jumbo lineups and giving Franz more on-ball opportunities and seeing how the three bigs can play together. If it just becomes the thing they have to do and they can only do that, I become a little bit worried about how they're defended and what their margin for error is. They've played pretty well this season, though they have not won yet. And so where do you go in terms of their lineup and scheme versatility right now?
Well, first off, injuries are no good. Definitely don't want to see that, especially at the start of this season, especially with those particular guys. Cole Anthony, Jalen Suggs, Markelle Fultz all have been battling what feels like so much health-wise for a large period of time. When you look at the landscape overall of the team, it's kind of a bummer because you're built on youth as an organization, but you're also trying to figure out just how good that youth is and what it looks like together. And this was a really good opportunity. So, you know, we talked about it on the preview pod. I was concerned with what does this look like? Do they have too many guards? Are we going to take things away from Franz? How does Paolo come into it? Is it going to be a bunch of post-ups, all that good stuff? I felt like they answered a lot of those questions. I had liked the blend they were putting together. Like there was good movement. Paolo and Franz were still involved, initiating actions in different ways. You had Wendell Carter Jr. doing things as well. It kind of let Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs just be themselves in a sense. You know, they get the ball off a swing. They get the ball off a kick to catch and shoot. They could attack scrambling defense and also get to pick and roll. So it was a way to kind of develop everyone at the same time, which was a concern I had. Enhance those guards' current strengths without kind of having that young point guard can't play in pick and roll or has to make decisions shooting too much type deal. But it stinks that now they have no choice but to lean into Franz and Paolo. And we've seen teams make adjustments. I think we were watching the Knicks game and they had Jalen Brunson on Franz and just said, hey, just pressure him. And it was like, ha, interesting. So now I want to see what this looks like, because it was a good leap that we saw Franz take last year in this kind of sort of scenario. And Paolo's been good to start. These are going to be good reps for him in different scenarios, in different situations with more weight on his shoulders. But ultimately for Orlando, you don't really get some of the answers to the questions you want with your entire group.
And it's just, well, to the Paolo point, at 100%, he's been very good, and we will talk about him and the other rookies a lot more next week. First rookie report coming soon, so get ready for that. But to your point, I love that they're getting the reps, but now it's just like, okay, if it's going poorly, what sub is Jamal Mosley making? Like, what tweaks can be done? It just very much feels like, nail this or we lose. And that just feels like a tough situation to be in for Orlando.
Let's be honest. Wasn't that the... Never mind.
Not like this.
Sorry.
Not like this. It's too early. Not like this.
My bad.
But I am intrigued by some of the coverage you're going to get. You mentioned Jalen Brunson picking up Franz. And like, this is now in addition to the questions that we both had heading into the year. Like, hey, these are a lot of like-sized dudes. Like, what happens if teams just switch? And so now you're removing some of the counters you can have, like, again, going to like some inverted ball screens, or where they would have like Wendell Carter Jr. in the corner and have a guard screen from have him curl in. Like, that's the thing they like to do for him. That's the thing they like to do for Paolo. If all of that just becomes a switch now, because you just don't have small players to kind of create those kind of mismatches, what does it mean for the offense? I'm just curious to see what it's going to look like. And to your point, your earlier point about the guards just dealing with health issues a bunch, like, it really stinks for Markelle Fultz, for what he's had to deal with in his young career. And now he's already out. Again, not out for the season, so he'll be back. But like, just to have this kind of pit stop per se, it stinks. Cole Anthony, very important in terms of pull-up shooting for him. He's not there. You wanted to see some offensive growth from Jalen Suggs in particular. Like, I feel like the rookie year from him was just kind of pooped on because he didn't shoot well, but he showed positive things. He comes out to, I think it was the Knicks game, where he's knocking down pull-up threes, just doing so comfortably. It was like, wait, I don't know if he's about to be a 40% guy or anything like that, but like, that level of comfort, that's a positive sign. The fact that that first year didn't deter him, and now you add in what he can do as a driver when attacking and scrambling defenses, what he already provides defensively. I want to see how that package is going to come together. So it just kind of stinks to see that kind of halted for now, but we will check back in on Orlando.
And then just real quick, there is opportunity. And because of the structure a little bit with those wings, you can kind of open things up for, hey, we just need you to shoot, or Harris get an opportunity to show what we can do for them. The keys are going to be, can they connect things? Are they going to have a roller that opens things up, that type of deal that you hit on? So we'll see what it looks like.
We will see what it looks like indeed. Speaking of wings, we'll go to the Western Conference now. Zaire Williams, dealing with patellar tendonitis in his right knee. He is out for 4 to 6 weeks. The Memphis Grizzlies bench already dealing with a little bit of turnover based on their offseason movement, have guys stepping up into more expanded roles. What does the loss of Zaire Williams do to their rotation, or does it, are you at all concerned about it?
I think concern would probably be too strong. Now, I mean, I am concerned with the fact that Zaire was kind of just out during the preseason, and then he was also continued to be out, and now this came out.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's good and he can recover and get back to business, because this is a big opportunity for him. Based on what he'd done last year, he had a great shot to really build on that and continue to move forward. So that's going to be delayed. This has been the Grizzlies thing during this whole stretch. Next man up. So the people that wanted the opportunities, they're going to be there. They're going to have to step up. Whether it's Conchar, whether it's Jake LaRavia, whether it's David Roddy, they're gonna be tested. So I think it's gonna be important for them to get these reps. As an organization, it's gonna be good for them to see, okay, what's the ceiling look like? What's the potential look like? How are they gonna respond in different lineups, different scenarios? And there is a freedom though, knowing that, hey, I'm going to get these minutes, as opposed to, hey, I got a shot, let me see if I can show something. You know, Roddy's prepared. This man,
boy, is it? He's letting it go.
His minute to field goal ratio is wild. I saw the Dallas Memphis box score when Dallas was up by however much they were in the first quarter. Man had 6 field goals in 6 minutes, and I think against Brooklyn he had 5 field goals in 8 total minutes. So he's ready for the opportunity. The good thing for Memphis is they've always, during this stretch, been able to identify the talent that fits with what they do. Mm-hmm. So while each of these guys are going to have different strengths and weaknesses, they can slide in and provide some quality minutes. And if they can't, they'll go to someone else. So they'll find their person. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Got you. I think just on that note, like, I'm not super concerned long-term. Again, they do have a lot of young players and players that they've scouted and drafted that they are comfortable with. Like, that's part of why they're willing to make the Anthony Melton move, or the year before where they trade Grayson Allen. It's like, wait, well, you're just doing it for Sam Merrill? And then you look at what the bench did last year. It's like, ah, trust the organization. They seem to know what they're doing. They seem to have a strong handle on the guys they have in the building. So fine. I would just say anytime you talk about knee stuff, like I always get a little bit queasy. Like I hope it doesn't become like a recurring thing down the line. And for Zaire Williams in particular, we both talked about this during the offseason. Like, hey, he's been given the ball during the summer. Like they are expecting good things from him. This is coming off of the rookie season where, you know, he's guarding Steph Curry within the first month of the season, chasing him around screens. Like this is someone that the pick was somewhat questioned. Like, wait, why are they getting him this high? And he immediately showed, no, this is a versatile defender. This is a guy with some pull-up chops that can probably be expanded offensively. We'll see what happens there. And zooming out, like if he's not their best perimeter defender now, like he at least projects to be moving forward. And so I just hope that whatever the knee issue is, like I hope the rest in the recovery fixes it more so let's get it to a point to where he can play. So it's just something to monitor. I hope he is okay, just to echo your sentiments to kick things off. And we will see what happens in Memphis. Are you ready to go into the mailbag?
I am. Are you ready to provide me the password?
You mean again? Because it's been provided before.
All right.
I see. Well, thank you to everyone that sent in questions to Dunker Spot Mailbag. Again, if you have questions throughout the week, you're listening, you're watching the game, like, hey, this popped out for me, let me see. Send it in, dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to it in these mailbag-specific episodes, or we might just sprinkle them in the regular ones. So thank you for the people that sent it in and continue to send them in. We appreciate the engagement. First one is going to come from Daniel, who starts with, hey guys, hope you're doing well. This is a question for you both. I am intrigued at the progress of Jason Tatum as the Kaisers has called for him to add a floater and fine-tune his finishing at the rim, something that he seemed to display in the opener against Philly. While it is early in the season, can Tatum be an MVP finalist or Defensive Player of the Year finalist in the same year, like Kawhi those last two healthy years in San Antonio? I feel that he seems to embody the whole package of being a defender at every level. The one thing is that, especially as a wing who can be a rim protector, he can play 1-4 defensively due to how he positions himself at the rim plus his size. Is this wishful thinking, and does he do enough on the ball to pop for voters? It would be nice to see both of your perspectives.
Well, I definitely think he can be one of those things in this scenario. And Jason Tatum, make no mistake, has been very, very good to start the season. So I think he is absolutely going to be in the MVP conversation, especially with how Boston has started. I mean, if you're going to have an early list, he'd probably be in that top five, top six. I am of the belief, I don't think Jason Tatum's gotten enough credit for what he does defensively and how he's improved on that end of the floor. So generally, we'll talk about Boston's team defense. And when we do that, it's really easy to highlight Marcus Smart or Al Horford or either of the Williams if they're playing. But Tatum is an important piece of that. He's active. He can guard multiple positions. He's improved as a help defender, navigating screens. He can get physical. It's going to be tough for him to be a defensive player of the year candidate for me. And I don't know if that's just previous reputation. I don't know if that's Marcus Smart also being on the team. I just think it's going to be tough. Like, it's funny, like the irony of like the 3-and-D, the lore of the 3-and-D, and that's usually wings. But wings usually have a tough time building a defensive player of the year case. It seems odd. Like, what's the last one? So Kawhi, Ben Simmons, Paul George.
Like, it's kind of it's very tough.
Yeah,
it's so very tough.
I think Jaylen Brown probably got more love at some point than Jason Tatum did. So
never said. Right. and that's less about Jaylen. It's more so like my broader thoughts when it comes to, like, I am someone that's still very much learning about defense. So I'm not gonna act like I'm some sort of savant. But I do think, like, overall, the value of off-ball defense and just what players are asked to do off-ball, like, it's just harder to grasp and harder to see than on-ball defense is. And so when you see the pockets of Jaylen's as good or a better defender than Jason Tatum, it's just like, we're just not seeing what Jason Tatum does on the back end. Like, you don't see how good he is at splitting and then even picking passes off or just making it tough and draining clock and stuff like that.
I think that's a valid point. Defense is tough to evaluate in totality for a lot of people. Boy, that sounds condescending. My bad. But you're not necessarily going to grasp what Jason Tatum does unless he has like a week where he locks down three stars, but that's not really Boston's concept, or unless he leads the league in steals or something like that. Like, at that point, then you would see the reputation shift, or people feel like, okay, I feel confident saying this. if your defense isn't loud, then jump off the page, whether it's activity or statistics or on ball type things that people can see. It's just tough. And especially if you don't already have the built in reputation.
Yeah.
What people are just going to go with the safe. That sounds disrespectful. People are going to go with the safe bet. Nah, Draymond. Bam. Rudy. Marcus Smart. Drew Holiday. Look how hard Drew Holiday has to work to get considered. And that man destroys actions on a nightly basis.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, and just kind of to that broader point, like, can we get Jason Tatum on an all defensive team? Like, it feels like the reputation is going to have to be there for him to get there. Like, I think he's genuinely one of the best wing defenders in basketball. But when you think of Jason Tatum, you think of the scoring. And then secondarily, it's, hey, he's growing as a passer too. Like, unless you are a Celtic diehard, for the most part, like, you don't really recognize, like, hey, this is, he's legit a two-way wing. And what he does so well, again, for me, it's he can defend on ball. He can navigate screens. For me, the big thing is what he does as a helper. Like, I think with what Boston does, just from a switching perspective, like, it's a little, one, Marcus Smart and Derek White are just very good at guarding up. Marcus Smart in particular. Like, it's part of the reason why he won Defensive Player of the Year last year. But it's also cool. It's also easier to switch your smaller guys on the bigs if you know, hey, if they drive this way, Jason Tatum might be lurking baseline. It might come with some help. Or you go to the opener against Philadelphia where they're sending the double teams on the move. If Jason Tatum is the guy making the double, that's a lot of length. That's a lot of that just makes it a little bit easier for you to send help that way.
I'm looking. I just looked up real quick the others players receiving votes for last year's all defensive team. Evan Mobley, Herb Jones, Dorian Finney-Smith, Jimmy Butler, and then Jason Tatum.
That's a lot of names to beat. That's a lot of names to beat for an all defensive team. And now you think defensive player of the year, like, you have to be able to, you're relying on the voters to see that Tatum is a better defender than Smart. Like, one, I don't think Tatum is a better defender than Smart. And so, like, that already makes the, but beyond that, you have to value what Tatum does more than what Smart does. And that's just hard for me to see. To the MVP point though. Yeah, he can do that. Like, I think Boston is really freaking good. I think Boston could very well end up the top seed in the East this year. And if Jason Tatum is going to, I don't think he's going to average like 34 a night, but like, if Jason Tatum is going to be a 30 point per game scorer on high efficiency with continuing to improve as a playmaker, and then you add in the defense, like, I think the case is going to be easy to make. So, like, I think MVP is a lot more likely than him having the MVP plus defense player of the year combo. Like, it would just take a lot of, it would take a lot for Tatum to get himself in that conversation.
Yeah. And that MVP discussion is going to get nasty unless people just give it to Giannis. Because Tatum finished sixth last year, I believe. And so Giannis was third. Devin Booker was four. Luka was five. Tatum was six. Ja Morant was seven. All of those people are entirely right back in the discussion.
And if you have the MVP voting up, like, where did Steph finish last year?
Eighth, I believe.
Yeah, like, and this is what Steph having the, it's so hilarious, a down year for Steph is like 38% from three on 10 attempts. And so, like, if Steph is just going to be superhuman Steph again, it's a lot. But, like, I think Tatum can work himself there. Like, defensive player of the year, I don't see it. Like, even if I feel like his value may approximate that at some point, like, I think he's kind of in that second or third tier of, like, defensive player of the year guys. Like, even if he can get close, to your point, like, getting the reputation there, it would take him being ridiculous off ball and also averaging over two steals and maybe averaging a block a game too. So now you can have, like, box score statistical evidence of him being an active defender instead of just, well, I watch Boston and he does very good at it, does very well with helping, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of where I land there. This one's going to come from Dan. My question is concerning the Kai's favorite young team, the Detroit Pistons. While they can get some fun stuff going on offense, at least with the starters, their defense is really tough to watch. Is this just the result of them being a super young core, or is this a legitimate coaching issue? I see a lot of concerns about Coach Casey's performance. Is he cut out to be the long-term coach of the Pistons?
Dunker Nation, let's ride. Like Nikias rode off in the sunset from that Pistons take. Now you know how I felt last year, buddy. Oh, bro.
Hey, man, I feel like the Pistons love that I was ready to have was just quickly transferred to Orlando before the year started. And so that's just kind of how that's gone.
Wait, how you cash up your young fan base love? This man did a whole mobile transfer.
I was like, hold on, dog.
A preseason game.
I'm like, okay, nah, if this is what y'all are doing on defense, but we talked about it during the watch party. I was like, oh, so y'all are, and not that this is new, but like heading into the preseason, I was like, oh, y'all are switching everything. And y'all are giving it up easy. And like New York just absolutely blitzed them, which, I mean, they're playing well. So that should have been, I guess, a sign that they have some juice on the offensive end this year. We'll get into that a little bit later. But I guess you can call it coaching. Like he's establishing the schemes. Like I understand the process behind being a switch heavy team. Like Detroit, even if you have Jaden Ivey in, like they still do have a lot of collective like size and length. So I get it. But I just never felt great about it. And like even the drop reps that we've seen from Isaiah Stewart so far, like they haven't been great. Like I don't know how much of that is coaching, how much of it is like maybe the personnel has been oversold a little bit. So like I don't even know how much of this is Casey. In terms of like the long-term thing, like I don't think, like I don't mean this slanderously, but like I don't think they want Casey to be like the long-term answer at coach. Like I think he was brought in to help them through this stage is kind of where I go. So like even if he doesn't end up being the long-term answer, it may not be because he's done a bad job. It may be because he's been here for the stage we want him to be in. And now that Cade is in year three or whatever, he's made a leap. Or now that Jaden Ivey is here, now that Jalen Duren is here, now that they've added more pieces after another offseason, now we're ready to make the next step. We want to get a little more creative offensively. Now we want to make this move. So like that may not be Casey's being a bad job, doing a bad job. It may just be the natural progression of their rebuild.
I mean, the word cut out is probably too strong for me. A little too expensive for my tastes. I mean, this man was a coach of the year for Pete's sake. I don't think he's going to get the opportunity to be able to make this group good. It reminds me very much of a little bit of the Brett Brown scenario. Like that's a hard deal when you're going through a rebuild because you need to progress well enough to get a chance when the team is good. And then you have to nail when the team is good. Because if you have gone through that portion of it, but you've shown enough to stick around, when it's winning time and upstairs thinks it's winning time and you're not winning, it gets a little rocky for you. So it unfortunately feels like the natural progression. To the defense question, honestly, I don't think they have a base they feel comfortable with. And if you think about it in theory, I was thinking about this. So Isaiah Stewart, his drop is just passive. It's very what I'm supposed to do. And Detroit's defense is very, I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to do. There's not a lot of coloring outside of the lines. Like if you watch them, you'll see them in position. They're in front of their man. Is there a lot of activity? Not so much.
No.
Every player is probably in a help position that they should be in. Do they know when to help, when to recover? Probably not. Isaiah Stewart's working on improving the drop, but he's basically just backpedaling. And he will switch, but he's also working to get better at that. So you don't necessarily know which one you should go with. The drop is going to make everything easier, but also open things up. The switch is going to open up the drives. Now you have to help. Now can your team do that consistently? And then looking roster-wise, no disrespect, I don't know how many elements of a solid base there really is. How many great perimeter defenders they really have?
That was going to be my question to you. Like, when we talked about Cade last year, it's more so like, man, he's pretty advanced for a help defender as a rookie. Like, we didn't really – like, the screen navigation is fine, but it's not high level.
Yeah. And how much size do they truly have? Do you feel comfortable with? Do you feel comfortable with some of these guys guarding some of the top people? How many great screen navigators do they have? So you just have a bunch of question marks. You have some youth. You get into tough scenarios communication-wise, and there's just breakdowns there. So I see them giving the effort. They're trying to do it. I just don't know how high the ceiling is for them defensively. Yeah. And I don't know if how much the evolution of the roster changing has hurt or helped during the tenure. Because if you want to talk about consistency, or what's the word I'm looking for? The word everyone uses.
Continuity.
There we go. That one. That really helps you on the defensive end. Because you can at least bake a certain level into your plan. If you're moving parts, you don't necessarily know which part is the best for what you want to do or what they can do. So a big old bag of IDK for me.
I feel you. So we are, want to get to your point about like who's going to be defending like the bigger players or the bigger stars on the perimeter and stuff. We're just going to be right back to Bojan Bogdanović having to do it, huh?
Hey, man. Hey, give Bogey some love, man. You got to give Bogey some love. Look, man, Bogey's come a long way, a long way. I still remember when I was in Brooklyn, we had him guard LeBron, and LeBron laughed.
Oh, that's tough.
And then he kept scoring afterwards. That was the real tough part.
I see.
You know, which led to a 40-minute debate. Next time we play them, do we double? Whole disaster. Anyways. You saw him switch against Trae Young against Atlanta?
Yeah.
Active, kept the ball. He's going to work.
He is going to work. I will never take that away from him.
Hey, look, Bogey is going to come, clock in, knock down some threes, try hard on defense, go home. That's it, dog.
That's it. I'll give him that. I will give him that. Hopefully the Pistons do not take him for granted. We're going to move to Sean. I know when Memphis got smacked at Dallas, sheesh, it was their third game in four nights. Same for the Celtics at Chicago. When you're watching the film, analyzing, reacting to games like that, how much weight does the schedule loss carry?
You ready for a convoluted answer, Nikias?
Let's get it.
One, I try to avoid blowouts because of that sometimes, because it's clearly something happened. Now, I'll try and pick it out and see if it's a pattern or anything like that. Or if I'm like intrigued, like how did this happen? I might take a look at it. Also, I'm a sicko. So anyways, mindset wise, I can't carry a ton of weight in the scheduled loss. I'm old and musty. If we do what we're supposed to do, we have a shot. I don't want to hear that. analysis wise, I understand. So I take it into consideration a little bit. I guess I'm lukewarm anyways. So I don't necessarily feel like it's baked in. Like, I don't necessarily write off what I'm watching. I'm not going to hammer a team, especially early in the regular season, unless it's a trend. But it is important, whether it's a schedule lost, fifth game in however many days, it's important to pick up on trends.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're just saying, oh, it was a schedule lost, don't worry about it, you're missing out on some quality information. Because if this is, hey, we just got beat up, okay, that's one thing. But if, hey, they're not getting back in transition. Hey, they're not getting back in transition. Hey, wait, they're still not getting back in transition. That takes the schedule loss element out of it for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it depends if there's more losses you can swallow easier or not. But, like, I don't know in that department. Like, we've seen throughout the season, you could turn on a game very quickly and know, okay, this team just does not have it tonight. Yeah. Whatever it is that they do, they are not doing it. If it's not typical of what they do and you're noticing those breakdowns, you can't really bake that into who they are. You got to know who they are first, or at least know what they're trying to do, which is why you got to do the work. But if the defensive team doesn't have the juice defensively, it didn't really matter about the scheduled loss. They didn't have what they needed. Like if you go back to the Lakers-Denver game that we were watching, it was clear the Lakers did not have any sort of extra portion on either end of the floor, which was going to just put them right here. A certain set of events had to happen for them to win that game. That didn't happen. They got beat up. Offensive team that usually plays with tempo and pace is playing slow and deep in the shot clock. Why is that? You know? Mm-hmm. So I try and understand the adversity portion of it, but I don't necessarily... I'm just not an overreactor to games unless I see something that is driving me insane.
That's fair. I think for me, like I try to bake it in a little bit. Like when I think of teams on four games in five nights or just on a back-to-back in general, like I just kind of expect, okay, this team played last night. They're playing, they're traveling again tomorrow. If they shoot 28% from three, like that's probably what it's going to be. So for me, if I know that a team has played X amount of games in a certain amount of days, or they're on the back to back or whatever the case may be, I care less about like how well they shot or how well they converted. It's more so the process to me, which fits with the bit, but it also kind of bounces off of what you said. Like, are they at least doing what they want? Are they at least trying to accomplish what they normally do? If it's a team that excels in off-ball movement, if they get the movement and they're missing threes because they don't have the legs, then yeah, like the schedule probably factors into that. Now, if it's just, okay, we're not moving at all, and also the shots are not falling, then like it may be some schedule, because I think that lethargy kind of kick in, but that's where it's like, to your point, okay, is this a trend? Has this been happening as the road trip's gone on, or whatever the case may be? It's more so like, okay, how is this team playing? If this is a switch team and they continue to switch and the switches are just a step slow, okay, fatigue might be the issue here, and I can kind of give them some grace. And so that's kind of where I like, so what you said is key. Like, you kind of have to know who these teams are first, and then it makes it easier to decipher, hey, are they slipping here, or did they just have a bad night because they need this two-day break that's coming up? This one going to come from Rod. We've reached the Dunker Spot watch party portion of the mailbag. Steve, top five players that can shoot that thing. Go.
Ooh, top five players that can shoot that thing. First of the month is coming up. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Devin Booker, Desmond Main, Damian Lillard.
Okay. Devin Booker getting a shout.
The boy can shoot.
He can. He can shoot that thing. All right. Moving forward. This is going to come from Mo, Triple M, as he's affectionately known. How are we feeling?
Play the game.
How are we feeling about the Knicks offense?
I'm going to let you go, because I logged into the Bird app today and I saw you say that you've liked what you've seen from the Knicks offense, which is another sentence that I didn't think I'd see from you. Which I guess, again, I should highlight to all the dunkers out there, growth is possible. The work can come. This man has praised Donovan Mitchell and the Knicks offense in a week while slandering Dwayne Dedman. I don't know what's happening. I'm going to let you ISO.
Wow. You know what's happening? Like, I'm watching these games and I'm seeing something different. Because if we talked about the Knicks last season, it's just like, man, this offense is kind of a drag. This is a whole lot of Julius Randle, and the shots aren't falling like they were the playoff year. So now it's just a lot of Julius Randle and misses, and this is weird. And then the second unit comes in, and they play with tempo, and it's fun. And then the starters come back in, and it's back to slow misses and weird. But to the actual question, I have liked what I've seen from the Knicks offense overall. Like, there are still the handful of possessions where it's like, hey, what is this ISO? What happened here? But overall, the tempo feels better. And I did a video on it on my timeline. You can check my media for that on Twitter. But I have enjoyed the emphasis it feels like from the Knicks, that we are going to stress out help defenders. We are going to have some sort of dummy action, or we're going to have something going on the weak side of the floor, whether it's relocations or some kind of screening action. We want to make sure that the backside of the action is occupied so we can get to what we want to get to and maximize space. And so, like, seeing them sprinkle in Spain, but seeing them like just have like handoffs and exchanges before flowing into Spain. Like, the offense just does not feel stagnant the way that it did last year. Like, some of that is just adding more talent. Like, Jalen Brunson has been very good. The rim pressure, the opportunistic scoring, the shooting, the playmaking, like, he has just juiced the offense pretty much how many Knicks fans expect him to, probably more than some Knicks fans expect him to be completely honest with you. But he's been very good. And because he's been so good, and because he's been able to generate paint touches or just get the offense in a better tempo and get them in order, navigate spacing, things like that, like, that's made life easier for Julius Randle. It's made life a little bit easier for RJ Barrett, though the shots haven't failed for him yet. I anticipate that to pick up. But I just feel a lot better about how they're going about their offensive possessions. Even when the shots don't fall, I can see, okay, this is what they're trying to accomplish. This is who they're trying to target on the weak side. It just feels a lot better.
The tempo has been important to me. Mm-hmm. And I salute Tibbs for that. I salute Jalen Brunson for that. But everything just feels kind of crisp. All their actions feel really crisp. All the movement makes sense. It's not a slog to get through it. You could see this feels like what they were trying to get to last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the personnel or the buy-in, whatever it was. This felt like they were trying to get to that. But this year, hey, we get to our first option. We get to some false movement before we get to that. And there's still 16 on the clock, 15 mm-hmm. on the clock. And now we explore something else. I've liked that portion of it. Ed Tibbs is sick of y'all. And I knew that when he said, I have no problem being seen as a defensive coach, but I've had top five offenses too. And I was like,
Drop the bars, Ben Tibbs. Drop the bars.
That man grew a beard out and said, I've had enough. How much of it do you attribute to Brunson? Do you feel like he has solidified some things? Do you feel like he's able to organize them a little bit better? I know these are very cliche point guard questions I'm lobbing at you, but you are Mr. EBK. So let's give some Knicks fans some joy.
I do think a lot of it is Brunson. Like, even in the video that I did, like, two clips featured Brunson in the game, but then there was one that had Emmanuel quickly initiating the action. And quickly scores on the floater in the play that I talk about, but it's like the timing felt a little bit off. Like, the tempo was good, but the timing felt a little bit off. And like, you could just see, one, Jalen Brunson knows where everyone should be and make sure everyone's in their spots. Two, he always keeps the dribble alive. Always keeps the dribble alive. And so even if the play doesn't work, he's able to circle around to the other side, flow into something. Or if he has a matchup that he likes, he's able to get into his pivots. His footwork is superb. Then get to some of the up and unders, get to his post game if necessary. So it just feels like there's always an option when he's on the court. And as simple as that sounds, like, that helps, because they are going to face, like I say, we're recording early on Thursday afternoon. Like, they are a top five offense and a top five half court offense right now. Like, the level of competition is going to perk up for them. Like, the schedule is going to get tougher in terms of the defense they're going to face. So we're going to see how they react to that. But just from a process standpoint, having someone that gets you in position, does so at a good tempo, so that if it doesn't work, you have time to go to something else. And for him to be a guy that can be an in-the-clock option for you and generate good shots, not just like contested pull-ups from beyond the arc. Like, the fact that he can just keep pressure on you at all times, it just makes life a little bit easier. If he's able to do that, RJ Barrett doesn't have to. Julius Randle doesn't have to. Evan Fournier doesn't have to. Derrick Rose doesn't have to if they play together. So it's just, it has been a lot of Brunson. But again, overall, like you said, it's been crisp. And like, it's been crisp with the second unit in too. And so like, that's a testament to the coaching. Like, the vibe seems to be good. Again, we'll see what it looks like as the competition perks up. But the early returns have been very good for New York on the offensive side.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. It's fun to kind of watch because, like you mentioned earlier, it felt like, okay, the second unit's going to do the things they want to do. But if you're getting symmetry and you're kind of building a wave in that form, it'd be good. I still would like to see a little bit more RJ mixed into some of these actions on the off ball. It feels like Fournier is a very focal point of that, which I get. If you're going to have him out there, might as well have him fly off some screens. And I just like to see Randle put in a few more positions to have a little bit more success. I think you can use him in different ways, but otherwise it's been good stuff.
Good stuff indeed. All right, this one's going to come from Ryan. This very much feels like a Steve question. I wonder if you had any thoughts on how the Wizards big three of Brad Beal, Kristaps Porzingis, and Kyle Kuzma are playing off of each other to start the year. I have been very encouraged by the results so far, even if the sample size is small and the team has a history of pump faking their fans with strong starts to the season.
I've been encouraged. I think the fact that you have Kuzma, Beal, and Porzingis all performing at a pretty decent level at the same time is encouraging. And it doesn't feel as my turn, your turny, as you probably imagine that would be. Mm-hmm. Like, I've liked the off-ball actions with Porzingis screening for Beal. I think that's the way that you use those two together, as opposed to just pick and roll, where teams are either going to switch or they're going to surrender the pot for Porzingis, where you know what the result's going to be. If you can get Beal rolling, now you have to make a reaction. Now Porzingis gets an easier basket. Now that might open up those threes for him later. I like that Kuzma has maintained the aggression that he found last year. And, you know, you see him flying off, getting handoffs, attacking early in the offense, attacking in transition. It just feels a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. I do wish their offense had a little bit more pace and tempo, especially since they do have multiple options. That's a work in progress, though. But it's just nice to see Bradley Beal not have to create everything, so to speak. Like, I think Morris helps in that aspect, and you can see an effort to kind of get Beal off ball a little bit more mm-hmm. and balance those things out. So I've been encouraged. I'd say that part has been better than I expected. And then again, I mean, they're all getting their shots. Mm-hmm. But I think Kuzma leads the team in points and field goal attempts. Beal's only shooting 14 times a game right now. Mm-hmm. Porzingis is only shooting 14 times a game right now. So you can see there's clearly a level of buy-in with what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you need.
Like, I like all three of them have off-ball value in their own way, which makes them fun to use together. And like to your earlier point about Porzingis screening for Beal, like I also like that they have some Beal encounters to where like, okay, y'all switch this bet. We're going to have Beal screen for Porzingis now. We'll just flip it and force you into something that you don't like. Like watching the Wizards Pistons game and watching them work together off ball. It's like, huh, it isn't static. Like, this is cool. Like, and even to the design standpoint, like Wes Unseld Jr., he's drawing up some fun stuff with some of their set plays. So just keep an eye on that. A quick stat, if we want to go to the Nikai Analytics real quick. 100 minutes of Beal, Porzingis, and Kuzma together. The Wizards have a 116.9 offensive rating in those minutes. It's been very good. The lineups with those three in it together, basically a plus 10 net rating right now. Again, it's 100 minutes, so net rating may not be the best thing to use. They're outscoring opponents when those three on the court together. So there is room for encouragement there. Again, like you mentioned, the shot attempts, like even with the usage, it's encouraging that they're starting to find that synergy together already. And it's very obvious, like Bradley Beal can get the 22, 23 shots on any given night if necessary. Like there's room for him to scale up. If you're just playing a pure drop team or a team that will be willing to play drop like Detroit was in that game, there's room for Porzingis to have a high shot attempt night if necessary. If you're playing a switch unit and you have smaller wings that switch on to Kyle Kuzma, you can feed him and he can give you efficient offense in spurts at a time. And so just having those three players that can create their own, they all have value off the ball. Kuzma has a shot well to start the year, but he is a guy that can knock down spot-up shots. Bradley Beal is a guy that can knock down spot-up shots to come off movement. Porzingis, again, you can screen for him off the ball. Just go pick and pop there and space the floor that way. Or even just spot him up behind the arc and go elsewhere if you want to go Beal, Kuzma, pick and roll. Like, there's just a lot there. So, I definitely understand the excitement around those three and how well they're playing. The Wizards as a whole, we'll see as the sample grows. Like, I have not fallen for the pump fake. I just have to see more from them, period. But with those three playing together, I definitely see room for excitement. Let's go to Jake. You talked in the last pod about defensive coverages for the Timberwolves that don't put Cat in a bad position, but also don't waste Gobert's rim protection. I was wondering what you thought about them doing something similar to what Boston did last year and putting Cat on the center and Gobert on the weakest shooter. That way you can switch or keep Cat high, but also have one of the best rim protectors in the game lurking.
Well, Jake, I was debating with your question. I decided to pop on the game of the Wolves and the Spurs, and they kind of tried that in the second matchup. They had Cat on Jakob to start the game with Rudy Gobert on Jeremy Sohan. And I kind of get it a little bit more than I've seen it, because Cat's going to bring the activity. And depending on where Rudy is, especially if he's on the weak side, he's now your help on the roller. He can now provide some of that protection as far as tagging. Now, you do get Rudy in space, which is still a work in progress as far as when to help, when not to help. But if you're not afraid of the shooter as much, makes it different. Now, I do think that is matchup dependent. And I do think teams would just counter with a smaller lineup if that were to work, which is my concern. Because now you're going to do that. Is Kat still switching? Is Rudy still helping? Are you now just kicking it to Rudy's man and he's driving and shooting like we've seen Terrence Mann and Dorian Finney-Smith do before? Does that open that can of worms? But I did like the idea of it. It does put a little bit of pressure on whoever the wing is to kind of rotate, because Rudy may not get all the way back out there. But, and that's the fun part about analysis. Like, it's easy to just say the Wolves are cooked, but it's fun to kind of see what they're having to figure out, what they're trying to work through, and then what they're trying to do as they try and figure it out. So to see them actually try that kind of concept, because make no mistake about it, Minnesota's best scheme last year was activity-based. And you don't necessarily want Rudy doing that off the jump. So how do we try and blend what he brings to the table, you know? And how often can we do it? They only have to figure out so many minutes. But yeah, though, I just don't know about Rudy's recovery, because Sohan did hit two threes on him. So I dig it, though.
Okay. I guess with that, you couldn't help yourself, huh? But I guess with that, like, to your point, like, yes, it's absolutely going to be matchup dependent. Like, there just aren't going to be, like, they're not going to be non-shooters like Sohan in every lineup across the league. And so they're going to be tougher help or not assignments for Rudy Gobert if you go with that kind of alignment. I do understand the logic behind it. And I think if you find the matchup, that's probably the best way to go about it. What I worry about, aside from, okay, they can't just downsize and put spacier lineups out there. And now Minnesota has to navigate that. Beyond that, I worry about what happens if a team is putting Cat in action off the ball first and then flowing into something. And now you're kind of getting, and now you're exacerbating the issue with Rudy helping. You have Cat coming out trying to navigate a screen, and then you flow into something. And now Rudy has to clean that up. And now it's a wider advantage the offense has created. Like, can you trust? Can you trust D'Angelo Russell to X out? Can you trust Anthony Edwards to make the rotation? Can you trust Cat to recover on top of that? Because that might be the bigger issue than the screen navigation. It's him trying to find the right angle, and then it's him trying to get back attached while he's trying to recover to a guy while also pointing at someone else, and who he's telling to pick this person up might not be the right thing. And now the third defender in this sequence is trying to figure out, okay, wait, if you're taking this instead of me, where am I going? Where is that guy? And now it's a big scrambled mess. And so I would keep an eye on that as well. But again, if you can dice, if you do get a matchup to where, okay, this is just a pure non-shooter or someone that we just don't care about, I'm down with getting the reps against that. And even if they do downsize, your biggest question heading into the year was, what does Minnesota do against small lineups? Like, yeah, get the reps now. Like, I would prefer it to be ugly now. And then once you get to January, February, it's like, okay, they have a plan of attack here. They have a course of action here. It may not always work, but they know what they're doing. Like, if they're going to get the reps, get them early.
Yeah. And it's fun to see them try things, even with the zone or something like that. They're making attempts to see, okay, what can we do to kind of tweak it? And then you have a great trust of Chris Finch. So if he has more things in his back pocket, they may be able to mix and match those minutes well enough. So we'll see.
We will. Can I bounce that off of you really quick? How do you feel about the Wolves zone? Because that wasn't something that I anticipated seeing with like both of the bigs in.
It's okay. I like it more when it doesn't feel like they have to do it, which I had the feeling the first time I saw it against San Antonio. But having that in the back pocket, I don't mind it at all. I think it does make it a simpler for Rudy. He's got one job. And I think Cat makes it easier for him. He's got one job. So yeah, he still has to navigate in space, but okay, this is my area. I know what I need to do over here. I think that helps him. So I think finding a way to simplify it is good. I just want them to have that in the back pocket, not kind of be the thing that they need to survive this 2-minute stretch or anything like that.
No. Okay, I got you. We have a 3-pack on the Grizzlies from Steve, and I am now
a 3-pack.
Yes, I now have several questions, considering this is coming from another Steve. we'll let that rock though. Santi Aldama. Okay, never mind. My questions are answered. Santi Aldama has been a wonderful revelation for the Grizzlies fan base. I believe the general consensus before the season was that Aldama still had a lot to prove. Okay, maybe this is you. Now that we've seen what he can bring to the table, it got me thinking about how well he would fit in closing lineups and potentially in playoff lineups down the line. I know that we've only got a small sample so far, but with that in mind, here are my questions. Number one, how good could a closing lineup of Ja, Bane, Brooks, Jaren, and Aldama be? We'll start with that one first. How would you feel about that five closing out games?
The thing with Santi Aldama, it just depends on his defense and the matchup. That's it. I mean, he brings a lot to the table. He's got the mindset. He's aggressive. He can shoot. He can make plays. It's the defense for me. Can he hold up? Like, he really works to contain, but any sort of movement is where I get concerned. If he's got to navigate a screen or a handoff, then what exactly are we doing here? So I think that lineup would be solid. It'd probably be on par with what Kyle Anderson gave you to a degree. Stronger in some areas, a little less in other areas. But if you need to use that as kind of a small adjacent lineup to throw at a team, I think you could be all right with it. I think it may be like a middle of the fourth lineup more than a straight close, but I get the vibes.
Okay. Like, I'm with you. I feel like I definitely see the potential, even to the closing point. I see the potential if it's this is our offense defense sub thing that we're doing late in the fourth. We want Santi in offensively, because what he does as a passer and what he does as a shooter, not just a spot up guy, but as a guy that is comfortable coming off of screens or being a pick and pop guy, like he can open some things up. Like Memphis can legitimately go five out with him and Jaren out there together. Or even if you just want to say, hey, we're closing this out with Ja, Jaren pick and roll, Santi Aldama would be a solid spacer. And to your point about replicating some of the lineup success they had with Kyle Anderson, like it's just a world of difference between those two in terms of shooting. And so that automatically juices it. Defensively, I'm right there with you. Like him in space has been an adventure. It's not from a lack of effort. And sometimes it's not even from a lack of like knowing where to be. Like sometimes he just can't get to where he needs to get to. And so I do think it would be smart if he plays well enough offensively, pairing him with a guy like Jaren, who when healthy, how many centers can cover ground the way that he does? Like it's Bam and Draymond and Jaren in terms of like ground coverage and cleaning up messes. And so if you do have those concerns, like having someone like Jaren to pair with him would make the most sense. I would also worry a little bit about just the collective rebounding. Not that Santi is a bad one, but like just the pure size that Steven Adams gives you, if you're going to close with him instead, like him being able to box out or him just taking up space on the interior or helping on the offensive glass, like that becomes a lot different if it's Santi in his place. So those are kind of the things that I would also kind of have in mind.
My other concern with the closing part of it is he would have to prove it defensively. So he may be a person that a team says, hey, put him in action. Let's see if we can get the switch. Going back to the Brooklyn-Memphis game that Memphis won, they just had Patty Mills screen for Kyrie to get the switch and then let Kyrie go to work a couple of times. And it was like, okay, all right. The effort was there, but again, it's going to be matchup based. So we'll see.
We shall see indeed. Second question. Is the aforementioned closing lineup better in theory than a closing lineup with Clark in place of Aldama?
No.
Okay.
I still like Jaren and Clark together with those three.
Yeah.
That's tough for me to go. You got two screeners, you got two rollers, you got athleticism, you got defense. That's to me is their best lineup. So I cannot go there. It's too expensive for me.
Too expensive. I'm right there with you, though. And the third one, which is the one I really felt was the most interesting of the three. Do the Grizzlies have the most versatility in terms of how many strong closing lineups they can use of any team in the league?
Ooh, well, let's talk this one out. I still give that to the Clippers or Celtics at this moment. Mm-hmm. I think the Clippers just have 9 million options that can all do this the same thing. And I think the Celtics have a couple options to be really good at that one thing. And really more, if you think about it. If they really wanted to go crazy, they could. Mm-hmm. So I'm tipping my cat there. Can we say Brooklyn at this? Probably not
no,
at this current moment.
No. I didn't mean to say it like that, but like, no, not right now. Not right now. We know.
Okay.
All right. I don't want to talk about Brooklyn yet. I want the sample to get larger because the conversation with them is just so toxic for a multitude of reasons. So I'm going to hold off on like overall Brooklyn thoughts until the sample grows. But like to answer that question, no, we cannot. No. My apologies. You can continue.
Okay. And so now let's just have some fun with it. I'm trying to brainstorm, see if we can get some other ones on this tier. Dallas?
I wouldn't put them above Memphis.
Wouldn't put them above Memphis. I guess it probably depends on how much you enjoyed the Spencer Dinwiddie. Mm. Would be my guess. They don't really have multiple options. So yeah, you're right. We'll get Dallas out of there. Golden State. Do they have multiple options? I guess would be my question to you. Hold on, why do you think about that? What is Memphis's other option? So I guess what is it? Tyus Jones and Ja and I see.
Like they can go a lot of different ways. Like even if they just want to size up, like, all right, we gonna have Jaren and Steven Adams out there. And
got it.
So like I definitely see the appeal. Like I'm surprised you haven't brought up Washington yet. If we're going like off the beaten path in terms of versatility, because I mean they have a lot of good NBA players. Like they can close the Porzingis at the five and put wings around them. Like they can take Porzingis out and say, hey, we got Daniel Gafford. Like they can just go wing heavy. They go Kuz at the five against certain lineups. Like they can.
They literally could put a lot of closing lineups out there. Like that is correct.
You're already up in there, so that's why I was like, huh, I wonder if he's going to bring up Washington off the beaten path.
I'm going to chop my feet on that one.
All right. Fair enough. I would say, because you already brought the Clippers.
I got one for you.
If you don't say it, I know what team would be an interesting one. Go ahead.
Toronto?
Toronto's a good one. The one I was going to bring up, New Orleans. I think they can go a lot of different places.
That's a good one. Ooh. Yeah. Memphis is up there, but yeah. There's a few.
Well, I guess actually on the New Orleans front, because I think the big boom they want to get to is, hey, we got Zion at the five, but that's still very much to be determined defensively. And we still have Zion to got to get him healthy again. So we'll see. But like the Pelicans with an asterisk, if we can go there.
Well, I mean, secretly, you got a lot of combinations you could go to if you wanted to pull Zion out of that closing lineup secretly.
Yeah, that's.
I know it's not always the most realistic deal, but you got Larry Nance Jr. you can throw out there. You got Trey Murphy. You got Alvarado. You can do some things if you wanted to.
You can have a lot of fun. Like they have a lot of different small lineups that don't include, which is wild to me. They have a lot of fun small lineups they can go to without Zion.
All right, let's have a fun exercise while we're just riffing. Who's last? Who's last in this category?
Oh boy.
Who's dead last in this category? They got one, maybe two. I got an obvious answer off the top of my head.
Go ahead.
I'm removing Charlotte from the conversation. I'm removing OKC, Orlando. That's just not fair.
Okay.
I'm pointing towards a team in the Pacific region of the world.
I'm torn between two here.
Which one you got?
I feel like, is this a king shot?
Mm-mm.
Okay, not a
same
king shot.
Same state.
Well, that narrows it down. Now, does it? Oh, Jesus. This is a Laker shot. All right. We here. We've done it. Steve nodding emphatically. Okay. Like, quietly, I thought you were going to go Phoenix for the bit. And I was like, surely.
I mean.
Okay, that's enough out of you. That is enough out of you. Is there another, like, I guess while we're waiting on things to be worked out early, like Minnesota is probably like the high profile answer, right?
I think they're hampered by the fact that you kind of have to play.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's Minnesota by default. I mean, because if you play one of them, it's only like one person that's going to come in. Yeah.
So that might have found the one.
It's a good shot.
Might have found the one indeed. While we're Pelicans adjacent, I guess, let's go to our good pal, Jeremy. He has a two-pack for us. Which is the most troublesome for Philly? Huh. Caught me off guard. We're going Philly first. All right. What's the most troublesome for Philly? Lack of flow for offense, being a terrible offensive rebounding team, or their transition defense? I think I know where you're going with this.
All of the little things. Every single little thing, every one of them, every little thing. It's all the little things. It's there is zero flow offensively. I sat here and watched the Sixers-Raptors game. We've seen enough Sixers games to know I wanted. Because I know I'm sure there's a lot of talk about the coaching and the head coach, because there already was anyways. So I wanted to look and see, okay, maybe let's look at this from their perspective. Let's take a look. I didn't even know what they were trying to run half the time. And it wasn't because a play call wasn't called. I don't know what they were doing in between. They are not playing outside of the play. Nikias, it takes 8 seconds to get into option number one. I have seen multiple times where it takes 15 seconds to get to a Joel Embiid post up. How? Why? What? If they get to option one, it takes 8 seconds to go from option one to option two. They are not putting pressure on teams like they need to. Like, you should never in your life have a possession where James Harden brings the ball up the court and calls for a stagger for Tyrese Maxey. Tobias Harris buffers. Joel Embiid gets in position to set the screen.
Buffered.
It gets better. After that happens, Tobias Harris decides, oh, yeah, I need to go screen. Joel Embiid says, oh, I guess we're not doing that. Let me pop. And Tyrese Maxey is in the corner like, what's happening? Eventually, somehow Tobias Harris slips and gets open. And it's a turnover. Nikias, they inbounded the ball to James Harden with 16 on the clock. He called for a flare for Tyrese Maxey. The flare did not occur. 8 seconds later, we get a pick and roll. Why are you doing this to yourselves? Put some pressure on teams. They call a set for Tyrese Maxey. He just doesn't come off the screen. I'm like, this. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand. I don't understand. But yeah, that lack of flow of offense would be number one in my power rankings. The offensive rhythm part, not so much. I would probably replace that with who on our bench is going to do something. And which one of these people do we play together? Because, buddy, they are searching. It feels like every rotation lineup they have, there's two people on the floor that kind of do the same thing. And I'm like, well, why are they together? Do I need George Niang if I have Daniel House at home? Like, do I need, okay, yeah, I got Maxine here. Does D'Anthony Melton need to be out here right this second? Like, Montrezl Harrell or B-Ball Paul? Oh, they're switching both of y'all? Sweet.
If they're going to switch, never mind. Continue.
Oh, you're about to get some slander off. Nah. But yeah, it's an easier fix, but the optics are bad and they don't have enough wins to survive some of these bad ones. Mm-hmm. Like if they were, what, they 1-4 now? So if they were like 2-2 going into that loss to the Raptors, 2-3 you probably swallowed. You probably get some haze or what do they need to work on? But at 1-4, fire alarms are going off and they need to buy in. And I don't know what's going on. Defensive activity needs to pick up. But the players got to play. They got to play outside the play. You have way too much talent to be looking like what people think the Thunder do offensively.
Wow.
You see how I worded that?
Yeah. That was very slick on your end. So for summary's sake, your answer is yes.
Yes.
But you definitely have the eye on the flow of the offense. I would have the offensive flow second. And the only reason I have it second is because even when possessions break, like you still have James Harden and Joel Embiid, and like they can just get a bucket at the end of the clock. So like even if it's ugly, they can still score. Like that's terrible from a process standpoint. You know how I feel about that. But like I feel like that's a lesser issue. Number one is it's just the transition defense for me. It's simply the transition defense. Per Cleaning the Glass, they are 29th in transition points allowed per play. And they're right on it. It's bad. It's really bad. And like this is something that I wish I had thought about more and brought up during the season preview. The division preview with Philadelphia. Like, how would the take foul affect Philadelphia in particular? Because Joel Embiid doesn't always get back with Ferber. James Harden sure as heck doesn't always get back. And if either one of those two take a shot on the previous possession and they feel like they got fouled and they don't, they're just not crossing half court until the bucket is scored. And so now you factor in the transition take foul. It is now you're absolutely just giving up numbers or you're giving up a free point. They do such a terrible job of getting back. They do an almost equally poor job of matching up, even when they're trying to get back. It's bad. That's issue number one for me. I think if you can get teams in the half court against Philadelphia, like the defense hasn't been what I thought it would. Like someone brought it up early where I was, on the episode with Doris Burke, I was like, hey, keep an eye on Joel Embiid for a defensive player of the year. Like, I think if he really commits himself, he can put himself right back up there. Again, he's dealing with the foot stuff, getting the conditioning back. So, like, I'm giving him grace. But the facts are the facts. Like, even with that context, the defense just hasn't been what many people thought it would be. But, like, it still could be fine in there in the half court. Transition, they're just giving up so many easy baskets a game. And what's going to happen as they still try to find their flow on the offensive end? Like, they're going to hit some of these teams that aren't going to be very good, but they're going to play fast. And it's just going to be like, wait, why is this a 4-point game with 2 minutes left? Why is Philadelphia in a 4-point game with team projected to finish 13th in the standings in the conference. It's they have to clean up transition stuff. Like, that's the low hanging fruit. They just have to commit to getting back and matching up correctly. This is a veteran group. You can't have that. Oh, and the second question from Jeremy was, after reading Kai's latest post on Christian Wood, why does he hate the Pelicans? I don't know how this bit came to be as the Herb Jones enjoyer or the Jose Alvarado enjoyer or the Larry Nance Jr. enjoyer or the Trey Murphy III enjoyer. I simply don't hate the Pelicans.
Well, let's take a look. I don't know if you're a CJ McCollum enjoyer. Brandon Ingram, you said, was not so great. Concerns about Zion. You haven't loved Devontae Graham. We're about at 50% here. So I think you're going to need to do a little bit more for your case here, buddy.
See, on the CJ front is more so, hey, what's happening defensively? And to CJ's credit, like, CJ's actually been pretty solid defensively at the start of the year. So he deserves his flowers there. Brandon Ingram is very good. Like, I feel like anything I've said inflammatory about Brandon Ingram over the last year has just been banter with a friend of the program, Jason Maples, because he's a big Ingram guy. And so I tease him with Ingram versus Middleton. But I don't have bad things to say about Ingram. Zion has just been the defense, and we've talked about that quite a bit. And Devontae, he just doesn't score inside the arc. Like, I don't know what you want me to do with that. He's valuable when the pull-up is going, and when it isn't, like last year, he just isn't much of a rotation player, it feels like, because the defense is bad. Like, I don't dislike him. It's just one-level scorer. And if the one level ain't there, it's kind of tough. It's just kind of tough. He's a very good pull-up shooter. He just it has to work.
All right, so I have you down as enjoying Larry Nance, all of the young wings, and Jose Alvarado. I have you disliking everyone else. Let's see if we can get a tiebreaker in here. See if we can break this. Jonas Valanciunas, thoughts?
He's good.
But?
He's not scheme versatile defensively.
Ah.
But he's good. So basically the thing is, I like all the good defenders and I have question marks about the other people. Is that a bit?
There's some age related in here. I'm not fully aware, but I don't know if I buy that you enjoy the Pelicans.
I do indeed enjoy the Pelicans.
This seems like the show on one of those apps that you don't necessarily binge watch. You just turn a couple episodes you're going to put on.
I don't know how I feel about that. I'm going to let that rock. Okay. This one's going to come from Paul. Who is a young player largely seen as underperforming relative to their draft status or potential that you think would really benefit from a change of scenery?
Nikias, I'm going to have you go first.
Going to have me go first.
Because I'm trying to get the definition of young player in this wrapped around my head. Mm-hmm. And you are kind of that's your ministry on the pod. I've been officially branded as just not liking young players, so I'll let you go first.
Not a fan of the narrative, huh? That's pretty interesting. That is, it's funny how that works. Anyway, young player that's underperforming is interesting to me.
Is it underperforming or just not playing?
Like, it feels like more of the. It kind of feels, it would be like more of the latter. But like, even then, there may be an issue where like you're just not playing because you haven't been performing. And so you just kind of go elsewhere because you're not doing the thing.
Like, would Cam Thomas qualify for this? I don't think he would qualify for this, but he'd look better in a different scenario if he had more time.
Yeah, like he just like literally can't play because of the guys that are ahead of him kind of thing. So that's
trying to find some names for you. Is it Patrick Williams? Is this the Patrick Williams question?
It's funny. We do have an actual Patrick Williams question.
Oh, I wouldn't mind. Consider it's not Patrick Williams then. Is it Obi Toppin?
Yes. But even then, I don't think it's underperforming at this point, but like he probably could be playing like 25 minutes a night. More than that somewhere. But even then, I mean, the second unit's playing like this.
Ooh, I got one for you. Yeah, we're going to turn this into the game. Zeke Nagy.
I can vibe with that. Also, Zeke, you got to set screens, brother. You got to set screens, brother. Help me help you make this case, because you know I want him out there. Shooting and the switchability is fun for me. My God, dog. This has been brief, very brief tangent as we get back to the question, though. This has been such a bad year for, like, young screen setters. Like, what is happening? Like, Zeke, Najee, Evan Mobley, like, it still hasn't been great for Mr. Mobley. Like, Mitchell Robinson's had some weird stuff. Anthony Davis has been freaking awful at screening this year. Again, I don't know if he classifies as the young player at this point, but, like, well, what is he? What, 28?
Yeah, you know? You just want to sneak that take in there.
No, like, it's just like, come on, dog.
Well, let me go ahead and get my old musty voice on, just because these boys don't know how to screen. All they want to do is shoot threes.
There we go. Is the answer?
Is it Matisse Thybulle?
Where does he? I mean, he looked good in Golden State, but, like, who wouldn't look good in Golden State? I guess with all that shooting. Don't answer that. Never mind. Matisse, like Killian Hayes, kind of.
Okay.
You did not want to accept that one. That's fine, though.
Hey, okay, let it rock.
Killian Hayes. Like, I think the actual, like, the no-bid actual answer is probably Kira Lewis Jr. in New Orleans.
Because,
like, he just wasn't going to get the time. Then he had injury stuff, and now Jose Alvarado is there. Like, he's just not getting that back. In addition to Devonta Graham being ahead of him, too. Like, he actually just needs to go somewhere so he can actually get burned. I said Kira. It might be Kyra. I need to fact check that one. So my apologies early on if I messed that one up. But I think that would probably be the closest answer.
Yeah.
It's him, and then it's just the Clippers 12 through 15. Because their team is so freaking deep, man.
Oh, man.
They have such a deep team. Like, Brandon Boston just isn't going to play. Like, Amir Coffey just isn't. Amir Coffey was getting garbage minutes. I was like, dog, he was in the rotation last year. He's good. He's, like, objectively good. And he just, which, hey, man, are we going to reach a point where Amir Coffey needs to play more than Norman Powell? Because the start of his season has just not been a good one. But anyway, we can now move to the next set of questions. A three-pack from Joe. Through the first few games, this offense, referencing Milwaukee, is still pretty dry and bland outside of Giannis do stuff. So I have a few questions. Number one, is Bud ever going to season this offense?
No, I think it's only rosemary and thyme. That's all that's on there. Maybe a little bit of black pepper. That's it.
A little.
This thing remains unseasoned. Just dry.
I will say I. Okay, let me not phrase it like that, because I think that's just going to be taken as inflammatory. I think the offensive flow will look a little bit better when Chris Middleton gets back. Because I think part of what adds to the frustration of the bland offense is when you have the offense where you have early bad shots being taken. And so if you alleviate some of that, I don't think the blandness really matters that much, because you're just replacing it. Maybe it's still something simple like a Chris Giannis pick and roll, but it's really freaking good, really effective, and the offense will operate better.
I can't necessarily blame him to start. Like, I do still think there are things he can do to season it a little bit. It is a little Giannis dependent, but I guess I kind of like him leaning into it. Although it's kind of weird. We did see the season opener against Philly where it was just Giannis distributing and a lot of handoffs and a lot of screening actions and a lot of Drew Holiday. But I feel like how much else are you supposed to run? You know, who are you supposed to run it for? Like, you got so many things you could do for Grayson Allen, but what are you going to do? Dribble handoff for Javon Carter? Just gonna dribble handoff for Wes Matthews. Some of these guys are just better built to space. So It's a combination there. I do think he could do more with the ingredients in the pantry, but he got what he got.
Yeah, I got you. Secondarily, how much does Middleton and to a lesser extent Jingles coming back help fix this? I've given my answer.
Middleton helps it a lot. I mean, he's already got baked in sets. So at least you can run that. At least you can get some of the variety as far as putting pressure on teams. With your big three together, with some of those screening actions they like to run. So that's going to help a ton. Ingles just depends on how he's used and what he looks like. You know, is he just going to be a spacer defender? Or is he going to get some of the secondary playmaking handoff type responsibility? So I think it'll be all right.
Got you. And number three, would making a move for a bench creator be a good idea? Jordan Clarkson is the name that always comes up, but I don't know how well he fits in come playoff time, especially defensively. Like, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I can see the argument for another creator, at least in the guard room, because what they have are spot up guys. Like, Javon Carter can get to his pull up some, but like, he's not a shot creator naturally. And then again, like, Grayson Allen, he's mostly going to be an off-ball guy and can attack a tilted defense. Same for Pat Connaughton. Like, they don't have, like, their best on-ball, like, scorer off the bench is probably Jordan Wara, which I'm here for him getting the reps if he can get there defensively. But also, if the answer is Jordan Wara, you probably do want better within, like, potential. Like, I don't know if, well, I guess if it's this version of Jordan Clarkson, then, yeah, you see what it takes. You give up a first, and then you go from there. I don't know if we get this Jordan Clarkson in the playoffs, so I have my brow raised. I see the argument for adding another bench scorer. Like, if they get Eric Gordon, I feel much better about Milwaukee, and I already have them coming out the East. Look at it. So where would you go with that?
I like the fact that the problem is, what are you getting out of Jordan Clarkson outside of he can hit a pull-up and pick and roll, or he can go get his own bucket? Like, is it changing the offensive style or just giving you someone that helps make it work a little bit better? That's what my brain goes to first.
I got you. I think because Milwaukee has such a specific ecosystem on both ends right now, like, I think they are the type of contender that can make the, hey, you, Jordan Clarkson, you just score. We got everything else. You're fine. I think they are set up in a way that they can absorb someone like that. And then if it doesn't work, then, okay, well, Pat Connaughton, you're closing instead of Jordan Clarkson. And then kind of go from there. So, like, I get it from their side. Like, again, like, I would prefer Eric Gordon over Jordan Clarkson. I think he's just better. Or would be a better fit for them. I think, again, Clarkson's been very good to start the season. So he deserves a spot for that. But, like, just zooming out a few years, reputation, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I would take the bet on Gordon before I take the one on Clarkson. They do need another guard that can get their own slash get to the basket, though. So even with Jordan Wara, like, it's more so I can get to the jumper any way you want me to. And that's valuable. But if they had another rim pressure guy, we're here. But if we had another rim pressure guy, then I think that would help them for sure. And now we can get into the Patrick Williams question. This is going to come from Larry. Shout out to the group chat. I have a question that I'm sure both of you can answer, but I would like thoughts, especially from Steve. What are y'all's thoughts on how Billy Donovan is deploying Patrick Williams? Is this another Wendell Carter Jr. situation? Also, what are some things you can run to get Pat more involved? He seems uncomfortable at times.
I don't think it's as dire as it seems. I think it's a function of that starting lineup, in my opinion. I think that there are times when you watch the Bulls, he does feel more involved with the actions. It does feel like the Bulls have tried to, with their attempt to play with more flow, with more pace, to at least have other guys initiate or other guys touch the ball first or get something before it goes to one of their big three. But again, they have their big three, and they also have Ayo Dosunmu playing like this, creating like this, which puts them in a tough spot. So, like, I like it when Ayo will bring the ball up and dribble hand off with Williams, and he dribble hands off to Levine or DeMar. At least he's involved, but there's only so much you can do opportunity-wise. And a lot of his opportunities are going to come in transition or attacking a scrambling defense or catch and shoot. So it feels like he has to just take a step in one of those categories to kind of unlock what he could do. So, I mean, if you want to say, what could they run? I just think get him more involved in the initial action, whether it's a screen, whether it's a roll, whether it's a handoff. That'll help. But I think it's just so tough because Ayo's playing so well and they have so many creators. So how many shots is he really going to be able to get? Probably, what, 6 to 8? He's averaging 6 attempts so far. It's going to be a function.
Yeah. And I think what makes it complicated for, like, some of this is just him. There are some times where the ball is swung to him and he just does not keep. It's a catch and hold and then the advantage is gone, or it's dribbling a little aimlessly and then kicking it out and someone else has to do something. Like, some of this is Pat has to take some ownership when he does get the opportunities that he's given. some of it is just, and like, I think it's important to note, like, I know what Larry means here in terms of a Wendell Carter Jr. situation, to where Wendell could do a bunch of things and then he was just pigeonholed into something. And now we get to see him expand his game in Orlando. With Patrick Williams, like, even coming in, like, the passing flashes never really were there. The shot creation flashes, like, again, going to the rookie year, like, it was cool that he can get to the pull-up midi. Like, it's not like he showcased this ridiculous handle, like, similar to Trey Mann, who didn't shoot well last year. But, like, we know what he can do as a shot creator. And if you give him more reps and let him expand, maybe the playmaking grows, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, it was always going to be kind of like a raw deal with him offensively. And it's kind of building up from the pull-up into live dribble reads into et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I don't think I also don't know how you really expand it in that way. Like, I don't know. It's not like there are a ton of pathways for him to be used, if that makes sense. And so that makes it even more important to, okay, well, he has to be able to make the growth as a spot-up shooter. Because then he draws closeouts, and then he's able to attack closeouts, and then you kind of build the boat from there. And now if he isn't shooting well, or he isn't shooting often enough, now it's just, okay, what does he do? And then if the advantages aren't created for him, I mean, if DeMar isn't drawing two or whatever, and then the cutting opportunities aren't there, then it's like, okay, what does he do? He hasn't shot well enough or had the volume to where defenses are sticking with him, so now they're sending extra help. He's, again, they've used him as a roller some, but like, he's not a great screener, not right now. And so, like, how much juice are you getting out of those roles? And on top of that, if it turns to a switch, like, again, some of the aggression, lack of aggression stuff perks up. Like, he may get a smaller guy, he doesn't always abuse that, as rare as it is. So it just, it has like a chicken or the egg type feel to it sometimes with Pat. Like, I understand being frustrated with him not getting the reps. I understand being frustrated with him not doing as much as you would like with him with the reps. I understand the Billy Donovan point, but also, like, DeMar DeRozan is better. Zach LaVine is better. Nikola Vucevic is better. Ayo Dosunmu is better. Lonzo Ball, when he's healthy, is better. Goran Dragic, playing pretty well off the bench right now, he's better. Like, there, how do you... How do you set aside possessions just for him when you have so many other better options? And it's not like the Bulls are, like, we've made this point, or we've talked about this quite often on the pod, where it's like, a team like Golden State, you know you're really good, use the regular season to get your young guys involved. The Bulls aren't a guaranteed top three seed that can really afford to experiment like this. Like, Ayo was solid in his rookie year, and Ayo seems to be making a jump in year two. They also need him to do that because of some of the injury stuff that they're dealing with. And even with that, like, Chicago may finish between 6-8 or 6-9 and then have to work their way in from the play-in there. Like, they're not in the, we can afford to win 46 games because we know who we are. But, and that also hurts the kind of development reps that they're comfortable giving Patrick Williams.
The tough part is also, it's tough to sprinkle him in with the second unit because that second unit is kind of humming in their own little bubble. I mean, you're trying to find minutes for Goran Caruso, sometimes Kobe White. You got Javonte Green. Derrick Jones Jr. appears to be getting some roles with the second unit, which I don't know why teams are letting him roll. But if Derrick Jones Jr. is impacting it that way, there's just not many minutes for him to go with that group and get some of those staggered minutes that maybe you would suggest for a younger guy. So it's just, he's just got to kind of maximize his opportunities and improve the skill set to contribute to that starting lineup. And as we saw with Ayo, as he produces, more opportunities will come. I think the tricky part is he's got to understand how to pick his spots, when to pick his spots, and he's got to produce when he gets the opportunity. That's always the tough part for a young player on this kind of team. You start thinking too much. You start trying to do the right thing or trying to make the right play. And now you don't understand the right plays. No, do that. Go do something.
Right. And so I do feel for him. Like, it's just a tough spot. Like, this was always, like, again, I'm not a draft nick, but like, this was kind of shown, this was kind of seen as like a developmental type pick. Like, here's the guy who has shown he can do some things. in 3 years or in 4 years, he should be able to be a very versatile defender. This is a guy that can get downhill. This is a guy, if the shot comes along, that makes him more multifaceted, et cetera, et cetera. So it was always kind of projected to be a process. Now you add in the players around him, you add in some of the scheme stuff that can limit the opportunities that he gets, you add in the injuries that he's dealt with. And now it's just like, okay, well, now what? What are we, how does he take that leap? Like, I don't even think this is a situation where it's really anyone's like fault per se. Like, Patrick Williams was always going to need the reps. The injuries hurt. He needs the reps because, like, there is some tentativeness in his game, and that's something that he has to work through, and he needs the reps to work through them. But like, it's hard to, I would imagine, like, if you are a tentative player, it's hard to say get your own when DeMar DeRozan has hit 4 of his last 5 shots. It's like, okay, well, yeah, I would like to work on my scoring, but I'm just going to swing the ball because these guys are cooking. We want to win. So like, there are so many things at play here with this particular situation. I feel like it's just kind of, it's, I don't want to say unfortunate because like, Chicago's still a solid team, but like, it's kind of unfortunate for Patrick Williams to reach the level that many want him to reach, because there's just so much working against that kind of development cycle. And this, we have 2 from Harry. This is a question that was sent in for the Doris episode, so slight wording change to fit it. Which non-All-Star players have you enjoyed watching so far this season? No rookies or sophomores?
Bojan Bogdanović, Lauri Markkanen, Bruce Brown has been very fun in Denver. Royce O'Neal in Brooklyn, I've enjoyed what he's done. A little bit of freedom. Mm-hmm. I really haven't sneakily enjoyed the Alex Crusoe, Andre Drummond defensive pairing. For some reason, it just kind of works. Mm-hmm. Like, Crusoe's bothering everyone, and Drummond is doing the active hands thing. It's just kind of fun. So that's my list.
Okay. Rookie or sophomore?
Oh, Udonis Haslem.
Okay.
Liked watching him play yesterday.
Okay. Cool. Let you have it. Justice Winslow for me. Bobo for me. Bobo's been legit solid. That is making me very happy. But you know, Justice has been good. Bobo's been good. Nick Claxton, again, has been very good for Brooklyn, which is further like complicating what to do with the Ben Simmons ordeal. But again, I want the sample to go far, really do a Nets dive. DeAndre Hunter's been kind of fun. Seeing him try to find his way playing between Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. So that's been interesting to keep tabs on. I'm trying to limit the list because I know I can go with something like this. I'll keep it there with another shout for Bobo, who is giving some real juice to Orlando off the bench. Last one going to come from Alex, who seemed upset. The hashtag is Big Mad. Why does everyone think the Thunder have been tanking for an excessively long time? The Thunder rebuild started last season. The year before, Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Lou Dort went to the playoffs and nearly took out James Harden, Russ, and the Rockets. I don't understand why the Thunder get the most flack when teams like the Pistons and Magic have been in far worse situations for considerably longer.
All right, so I assume I have to play the villain role here, right?
Sure.
Okay, well, you were good. And you've won 46 games in 2 years, mm-hmm, with a mixture of just shutting guys down halfway through the season, with a mixture of just not a lot of moves being made that appear to be towards building a team for winning in the Western Conference. I'll put it that way. Like, I get the vision, but like, if you did that on 2K, would you feel good about that? You know, that's probably why you get the flack, just because, you know, it just seems a little, this is going to sound unfair. It seems a little more overt what the goal may be at times. And some of that is uncontrollable, but I mean, what was it? It was last year where it was just a week of, hey, this guy's not playing anymore.
Yeah, well, we got multiple press releases like, all right, well, time to really focus in on the Poku minutes. I respect it. But
no. it doesn't help that they have all those picks. Like, that's just going to be a cloud over them, mm-hmm, until they either land the one or they make a move with the picks.
Yeah.
It's like, it's coming. The turn is coming, but I'm sure, like, would you rather be yelled at for quote unquote tanking, or would you rather be yelled at for being bad?
Mm.
Like, that's the thing. Like, y'all are getting a little bit of grace with that.
Mm.
You want these Kings jokes?
Like, probably. Oh man, that would have been a wonderful line to end it on. But okay, but no, I'm with you though. Like, the reason you get the flak is because it's not about how long the tank has been. It's because the tank has just been it's been so aggressive is why you get the flak. And that's where it turns into, man, the Thunder haven't tried to win the entire time. Like, no, that's not true. And yes, you are 100% right that the actual tank has not been very long. So like, that's very much valid. And that's a fair thing to point out. But the reason you get the flak is because it's normally like a gradual teardown. And then you get ground zero, and then you build your way up. No, the Thunder is like, the Thunder pressed the button.
Mm-hmm. That's the other part. It's a good point.
Like, the Thunder pressed the button. Like, you look at the Spurs, where, all right, cool, we got LMA and the crew. We don't have LMA anymore. We got DeMar. We don't have DeMar anymore. We got DeJounte. We just traded DeJounte, and now it's this. The Thunder just kind of like, all right, well, Chris Paul, bye. We got Horford. Thanks for your 20 games. Bye. It's just been a lot.
No, I mean, the self-awareness has been admirable. I mean, usually teams will try their way into a rebuild or a situation where you're at the bottom, like you mentioned. OKC just kind of decided to, which is probably a piece of it. And also, like, the veterans just chill at home deal. Like,
does anyone have a Kemba Thunder jersey? Like, so it's just, yeah, but like, that's why you get the flag, because it's just been so aggressive. And again, I say the tank has been aggressive. At no point have I said the tank is the incorrect thing to do, or even that it's been like handled poorly. Like, we talked about it during the division preview. Like, my question has been like, okay, obviously you are aiming for young talent. You're trying to find the one. I think a better two would help create a better developmental ecosystem. It's not even necessarily like, hey, push for 35 wins, but like, get more guys that can shoot. They don't necessarily raise your ceiling for where you're now finishing 11th in the West and you're at the pick, but it helps your guys make better reads because the floor is more open, et cetera, et cetera. So like, there's room for it. But like, I don't even disagree with what they're doing fundamentally. Like, I think it's fine, but you get the flat because of how it's been done, if that makes sense. Fair or not. And that concludes the mailbag. Again, thank you all for sending the questions in. If you have more questions for us, email us at dunkerspy@yahoo.com. Steve, do you have anything before we wrap this up?
I got some free throws, dog.
What you got?
just a couple for you.
All right.
Who is your entirely too early coach of the year?
Oh, geez. This feels bit adjacent. Is it? Well, I guess if it's way too early, it kind of has to be Will Hardy, right?
That's fair. I'll take it. No bit. So Ja Morant shooting 60% from three. How do you feel about it?
Doesn't seem fair. I'll be honest. You shouldn't be able to drive like that and then also just bomb away. Like, pick one. Make it fair for everyone else.
I believe Victor Wembanyama games are going to be on the NBA app. How do you feel?
Feeling real competitive right now. Like, it just makes me want to go out there and compete, much like all the NBA teams should be doing at all times.
Got it. Grant Williams was suspended for one game. He said the contact was nowhere near intentional. Did he mean I didn't mean to do all of that?
It feels more like, hey, bro, my bad. I didn't know I was. That was one of those I watched that back and was like, oh.
How big of an apology do I owe Pascal Siakam?
See, here's the thing with that, right? I can answer this, and then I'll ask you a Raptors question in a week, and then you will anger Canada again. So I don't even know if it's...
Accountability is important. I need to be held accountable. How big of an apology do I need to give Pascal Siakam?
I'd say a moderate apology. Okay. Is due for Mr. Siakam. Like, you never say like he's bad or anything like that. Like, bit aside, so like, I don't think it's anything.
My bad, Mr. Siakam. Won't happen again.
Until a couple of weeks, yeah.
How do you feel about the influx of change the scouting report, please, energy that's in the league right now?
I'm kind of here for it. This is very much the Bruce Brown question. It's just like, hey. Nah, like I shot well from three. Like, no, I can just shoot. That wasn't a good shooting year. I can shoot. Stop helping off of me. Stop going under. Like this is like during the steal from the watch party. This is what he does.
How do you feel about the recent Popeyes revolt?
I just didn't understand. I didn't think this is where it was gonna go. I'm going to be honest. Hey, can we talk about this for a minute? Because, like, Cat was very much asked a question. Like, Anthony Edwards first was like, hey, I'm always bad on the second night of back-to-backs. I need to figure out what's going on here. I need to be better. He was taking his own accountability or his version of accountability. We'll see what changes he makes down the line. And that extends to a bunch of situations involving Anthony Edwards. But neither here nor there. Cat is then asked, hey, Anthony Edwards said he needs to be better on the second night of back-to-backs. He needs to do a better job of being prepared. How can you help with that? And then Cat answered the question. And then he makes the side comments like, yeah, y'all be laughing when he be talking about Popeyes. That'll make me happy to hear. And like, even if you hear the video, like, it's not like he's saying it angrily or anything like that. Like, he just answers. Like, I can't believe that this has become a whole thing. But like, the Popeyes tweet is funny.
And just also funny, didn't Ant show up with Popeyes like after? Oh no, that was last year. Never mind. Yeah, that'd be funny if he did it again.
Oh god, if he just brings Cat Popeyes next, it's like
that would be very funny. Dennis Smith Jr. said he was going to go try and play in the NFL instead of playing basketball overseas. What do you think?
I feel like he played football in like high school. That wouldn't shock me. Like, it's not like he'd be the only player that's ever done it. He's a ridiculous athlete. So like, it doesn't surprise me that he would try it. I do wonder like what the position would be.
What would your reaction be if the Eagles had picked him up?
It would have depended at what position. Like, if he wanted to return some kicks, that would have been cool. Cause like Britton Covey just ain't doing it for us right now. Also Robert Quinn, welcome.
Oh,
but continue. Very excited about that one. A fourth round pick for Robert Quinn. He ain't seeing double teams no more. It's about to be.
Power rank your surprise level with these teams being in the top five offensive rating right now.
Let me see.
There's only three people.
Okay.
Or teams. Sorry. Dallas, Charlotte, New York.
Power rank the surprise level?
Yep.
New York 1, for sure. Yeah, New York 1, Charlotte 2, Dallas 3. And I think Charlotte, because they haven't had LaMelo. And so, like, the fact that they've been able to run as much as they have still and boost offense that way, like, it, yeah, I'd say that. And then Dallas, I mean, they have Luka. Like, at a certain point, you probably expect them to just be a top five offense by virtue of having him. But then you add Christian Wood in. And those two have been incredible together offensively. So Dallas is last for me.
Do you think that your New York Knicks video breaking down their offense and heaping praise will make up for the fact that you said Tyrese Halliburton was much better than RJ Barrett?
Well, one, the answer is absolutely not. Two, those were not my exact words at all. So we're not about to do this. We're not spreading that propaganda. Now you instigating. Now you owe me and Canada an apology. Unbelievable. Also, Tyrese Halliburton has just been better than RJ Barrett this year too. So like, on top of all of that, he's actually been better.
I was just going for the bit. I didn't know you were going to double down. Oh, man. I'm sorry. That went better than I thought. Who's playing with more confidence, Jalen Noel or Dylan Brooks?
Oh God. Yes. the answer is always Dylan Brooks, though.
It's Dylan Brooks time.
It's always Dylan Brooks time.
Who do you trust to knock down a mid-range jumper more for you? Marcus Morris Sr. or Gordon Hayward?
Okay. I did not know where that was going. More trust knocking out a mid-range jumper. Oh, God. Probably Morris, just because he'll have more opportunities to actually make them. He will be on the court more to take more, okay, and thus make more.
One player question for you. We're almost done. Who do you pick right now today, Jamal Murray or Kyle Lowry?
Right now today, probably Murray still.
Mm. All right. And then final question, man. How long will you be taken for granted?
Oh boy, I don't even want to talk about it, but oh boy, we ain't even make it. It's been a week, dog. It's been a whole week. Wow, I guess not long is my answer. I don't know, but like, it's been a week. How are we already getting IG captions and laser talk?
I don't know. But we'll never take you for granted here. You know, until you start the short corner.
Okay. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode of The Drunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join us in the Dunker Spot community. We're having fun. Join us in the Dunker Spot watch parties. We are having a lot of fun. Analysis, banter, outright foolishness, dairy products. It's a whole thing. Emails, mailbag questions at dunkerspot@yahoo.com whenever you have them. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Let's ride.